Mozed. Welcome to Winner Take All. We have a very special guest today. We have Adrian Nussenbaum, the co-founder and co-CEO of Miracle, a now many times over unicorn, the leading marketplace technology provider. And now Adrian is also donning another title of co-author. Adrian's recently published a book here called The Online Marketplace Advantage, Sell More, Scale Faster, and Create a World-Class Digital Customer Experience. Adrian, great to have you back with us.
Hey, Alex. Always good to talk to you, the man who knows it all about the platform economy.
Well, you know, now we get to share that title as two fellow co-authors. So, you know, that's how you know you've really made it.
I've tried to walk into the footsteps of you, Alex, but I think we in reality, I think our books do complement each other pretty well. I think your book provides a very kind of strategic macro view of the platform economy. I think our book tries to bring a lot of the insights from the actual people getting their hands dirty and every day in the trenches. So I think they're kind of good compliments, the perfect Christmas gift or holiday season gift.
Yeah, maybe we'll bundle that.
Do a bundle.
I mean, but you know, in all seriousness, right? I mean, in the marketing for the book, you say 350 plus. I think it's now over 400 marketplaces that you know Miracle Technology is powering. You've recently crossed, I believe, the $6 billion in GMV threshold. Over 400 active clients, 135 million in change in ARR, in recurring revenue. Miracle Connect has over 10,000 sellers. You know, you guys have a lot of arguably probably the most, you know, first party knowledge of working inside of these large enterprises to help them launch these marketplaces from scratch, right?
Yeah, I think we as you know, Alex, we created Miracle now 12 years ago, and we've been living and breathing marketplace for even many years before that. So we've made it our life. I think going back to what you were saying about over 400 customers doing marketplaces, but not just, and I think this is also somewhere where it kind of goes back to the vision of the platform economy that we've shaped, because we realized that marketplace or consumer marketplaces, more which can be opened or closed, they're kind of one expression of this platform economy and multi-supplier, multi-vendor digitization acceleration, and within those 400 customers, it's scaling dropship, it's B2B internal procurement marketplaces, it's digitizing the way you go to market through your distributors, it can be trying to be the one-stop shop of your category. So there's many flavors in these strategies, and some of our customers will talk about their project as, we're doing a marketplace, we're doing a range extension strategy, we're building an ecosystem of our suppliers, we are digitizing our internal sourcing, but they will all use the same technology behind. And I think what the book provides, it's, as you said, it's real insights from those, we call them pioneers, but these business leaders who are transforming their organizations. And that's why in the book you have, you know, customers testimonials from, you know, 1-800-Flowers to Kroger, from Airbus to Covento in the wind turbines manufacturing and parts distribution. So it's a very broad landscape and very interesting use cases.
You've got everything from B2C marketplaces to B2B. You've got product marketplaces. You've got service marketplaces. You know, and you provide examples of all those different scenarios. You also talk about not only the kind of hard brass tacks around the different types of platform and marketplace business models that your technology and your clients are rolling out solutions in, but you also talk about the governance and the kind of cultural shift and the, you know, the human component, because you, right? I mean, I'm sure you do have some startup customers also, but I mean, I think the large weighting are for that your customer base are larger enterprises. So, you know, when you think about a large enterprise starting a new business model, that's not the easiest thing to accomplish. So you have a lot of really cool war stories talking about that side of it, right? You know, talk to me about this marketplace temple concept that you have and some of those insights and takeaways you've had from all those human side of experiences.
Wow. The temple. So the temple, I think we owe copyrights to McKinsey because they love the temple concept and I think we're lucky at Miracle to have a very broad diversity of colleagues, including ex-McKinsey consultants who do bring some interesting strategic flavor to how we engage with our customers. Because as you said, it is a change journey. It is a project that requires alignment across multiple segments of the organization. It's not just about the technical feasibility or slotting it into the roadmap. It's not just about the costs. It's really about, you know, realizing that this is part of the real strategic roadmap when it comes to either digitization of your business or accelerating your digital business growth. And so we are frequently engaging with anywhere from CEO, CMO, CFO, chief commercial officer, head of merchandising, CIOs, etc., to make it as much as possible a company-wide transformational project. And they are, you know, there are war stories and sometimes horror stories. Because it's not always easy to align, you know, the fear of change, the fact that you never walk into an organization where someone tells you, I have nothing in my tech roadmap. Thank God you're coming up and giving us something to do. But I don't understand. Are you saying that my customers are going to be buying from third parties? But how do I control, and what about cannibalization? And I think that for many, many years in the history of Miracle, we and people who work at Miracle and some of our partners had to do the hard selling of explaining why it's actually providing often higher financial contribution, it's more profitable, how it's driving increase in traffic, how it's optimizing the supply chain and sourcing. And now we are at a point where, and last week I was in Chicago where we're doing our world tour of Platform Pioneer Summit. I was sitting in the room and I had one of those kind of aha happy moment as a founder where I was listening to customers on stage and at round tables, and they were doing the selling to the other people in the audience. And I think it's a pivotal moment. And I can share an anecdote, for example, if you have 2 minutes. But we were at a dinner, and one of the potential future customer brought up the topic of cannibalization. So one of our customers said, "Can I answer?" And explain how in the early days of their marketplace, they were they wanted to go into extending into a category which was kind of air purifier, air scent type of thing. And they were saying, like, our average price point was basically around $30. And so we launched a marketplace and we started introducing products at a cheaper price point, $15, $18 average selling price. And immediately we started selling a lot of those, and we were also selling more of our own at $30. The merchants came to us and said, hey, you have to stop selling products at a cheaper price. It's hurting the positioning of our offering. And the guy was explaining, well, you know, we did what they asked us. We stopped selling at a cheaper price. We only put some at $50 or $60. And what happened immediately is not only did the marketplace sales crash, but the own inventory sales also declined. And so it was a great proof internally to explain that it's all about the customer and expanding the reach into more customers, into more share of wallet. So yeah, I digressed a little bit, but it's all about those. It's easier to have those war kind of stories when we're not the supposedly biased vendor always advocating for things that we've seen, but somehow because we're a vendor, we're not to be fully trusted.
Of course not. What are some of those deal breakers? You guys are, you know, talking to a prospective customer. You know, what would they do or not do where you just say, you know, this, I've just seen this too many times. It's not going to work. I don't even want to waste my time. Any deal breakers?
In our kind of 10 commandments, which I have a successful platform transformation journey, I won't cite all of them, but there's one which is the marketplace or the program, the dropship, needs to be fully integrated into the core experience. So no separate basket, no separate site, no separate tab. And especially in B2B, there is a tendency to run often in that temptation for different reasons, you know, like payment terms. Oh, we offer specific terms on our own inventory. It will be inconsistent if it's different, you know, different terms for non-owned inventory products, or routed versus non-routed customers. Like we have routed customers, they, you know, they get the truck delivery every day. How come we kind of, why would we offer on the same portal to these customers products that can't be part of the daily routes? So these are real questions and they need to be addressed. But the two tab or two sites or two basket is not a long-term viable option. And I say it's not a long-term because as a company, we've had we have too much respect for companies who are already thinking of doing this, that the last thing we would do is tell them, sorry, we're not going to work with you and help you achieve this because you wanted. But it's always having in mind what the journey can be. And also on our side, what we can always build either in-house or via partnerships to facilitate these potential pain points. And last week in Chicago, UNFI, which if you're familiar with them, it's one of the largest food wholesale distributor. So they sell to grocers and food retailers. They were explaining on stage how when they initially launched their platform, they launched it on a separate URL, on a separate brand they owned, to address only the non-routed customers. And a year and a half into being live and seeing how it works and testing, and they started, you know, engaging their routed customers on the opportunity for them to get access to more local suppliers, more diverse selection. And basically the route, they were explaining how the routed customers told them, you know, if it doesn't come in the same truck, we're fine with that. because these are maybe less kind of time sensitive products that we need for our stores, our restaurant. But we, what really matters for us, it's that we can have any the terms that we have with you can be extended to your partners. And we want to have one invoice. And so typically, these are also innovations that Miracle built over the last couple of years as we worked with more and more companies in that more kind of diverse B2B spectrum. And so now, you know, we're able to help our customers provide a single invoicing, even if the customer is buying from multiple third-party vendors. And we're able to allow our customers to extend their terms to even their third-party partners. So things I think they're not black or white, and as always. And also it's important to factor the fact that engaging in this project is a long-term transformation.
To your point there about B2B, are you seeing, you know, I want to talk more about what you do, you know, for over the longevity of the customer relationship. We're going to get to that in a second. But when you think about new customer signups or, you know, launching new marketplace initiatives, are you seeing greater count of opportunity or potential of opportunity in B2B versus B2C? Is that pendulum swinging in that direction yet?
I think it is slowly but surely swinging. Just to give you a sense, now, I mean, 5 years ago, B2Bs, because there are so many different B2B situations, whether it's like digitizing internal transaction, becoming the one-stop shop of the plumbing industry, or getting all your dealers onto a single platform, creating a marketplace for parts and services, it's much more diverse than in the consumer retail space. But 5 years ago, it was less than 5% of our business. Now we're reaching close to 30% of our business. This year in Chicago was the first time we had a B2B only summit customer and, you know, future customer event. We had roughly between partners and customers and prospect, we had close to 160 people, of which 60 potential future customers and 30 clients. So just in the US. So it's clearly accelerating. And I think it follows naturally the digitization journey of these organizations where they've initially looked at, I mean, they looked at how they can have a web portal, how they can digitize their catalog, but then they got more difficult questions like, how can I give my end customers real-time inventory visibility when everything is through distributors? I'm the source of all truth. For 3M was explaining how, you know, they get a lot of traffic on their side. They're the source of all truth. Their customers were asking to them, like, how can I have visibility on inventory and access to your products directly? But they're 100% indirect business. So they would say, you know, what could we do? We could try to create a complex order management project or we could do like dealer locator where to buy, but we lose visibility on the end conversion. And so they decided to create this, you know, platform initially with their personal safety division, which they've expanded, where they bring their distributors on the one roof. So we're seeing, you know, an acceleration, and I think it's the right time because more and more B2B companies have done, you know, they've gone through the, okay, how do we address the anytime desire from our customers? How do we address the anytime anywhere? But now we're kind of facing the real e-commerce 3.0 dilemma, which is anytime, anywhere, anything. And that kind of anything component is where we fit in.
You know, the other way that you've expanded and continued to have strong growth are in the facilitation of other value-added services. You know, you now have, I don't know, I'm by my count, at least three or four things going on. You got financing and providing, you know, the facilitation of payments and net payment terms, logistics, ads, and personalization. That seems relatively new. That actually seems newer to me than Miracle Connect, which is where I want to get to next. But I'd say maybe the back half of your book touches on kind of, okay, hey, here's what it takes to kind of get this thing going. But hey, now that it's going, how do you scale it, right? And so talk to me, you know, how are you guys thinking about value-added services and what you're doing there?
Well, I think our approach has always been centered around solving pain points for our customers and addressing and helping them create more growth opportunities. And obviously, and it pains me a bit to cite them, but the way Amazon has created that flywheel and network effect where, you know, marketplace led to fulfilled by and fulfilled by led to AWS and led to also Amazon advertising. I mean, the whole thing, basically, you take away Amazon marketplace, you take away 80% of Amazon's market cap today, basically, because it spun out of this, how can we build upon our assets to play more of a central role in the ecosystem that at the same time we grow. So when you look at the things we've been doing, and we've been quite busy because, you know, launching three new products in 1 year and successfully and on time and already used by customers, it's kind of up for the Oscars of tech. You take payout, the kind of like the environment, the legal and compliance environment around these third party intermediated sales is not going away. It's even low. It's localized. It's sometimes complexifying. And so we were looking at a situation where there is potentially a loss of velocity when you have to manage KYC every time you onboard new vendors. You vendors, if they can't be paid in the currency that they want, where they want, it might slow them from selling more. So basically, it's slowing down the growth and the potential business acceleration. So we looked at the state of the market. There's a lot of great payment solutions, but there's nothing great for payout and or kind of agnostic, pain agnostic payout solutions and market, you know, marketplace 3P models. So we decided to build that, and it's already being adopted by our existing and new customers. You look at ads, retail media is something that everybody's talking about. So there's obviously some buzz and overinflated buzz somewhere, because not everyone is going to suddenly generate billions of dollars by asking people to, you know, by selling visibility. But we looked at our customers and also at the thousands of sellers and vendors that are on Miracle Connect, our ecosystem of third-party vendors. And we saw that there is a desire for them to get more visibility for their products. And we also looked at the fact that existing ads or retail media solution were not 3P specific, purpose built, and often lacked the element of not just presenting a paid product, but the right paid product. And we tied to the fact that we talked about personalization. But a year ago, as we were thinking of going into this ad business, the way we decided to go to accelerate this journey was to buy a frankly brilliant and great product, but kind of underrated company that had been around for 10 years, Target to Sell, with an amazing product that we felt we could really leverage to not create just another retail media solution, but a retail media solution where it's always the flywheel. Like our clients can become publishers, so they can sell visibility to third-party vendors who want more visibility, but leveraging the AI of the technology, put the right product so that you also increase the conversion. And so ultimately, everyone wins. So that's kind of the approach we've been having as we extend our suite of connected solutions.
In other categories, like let's say finance, you know, you like the actual extension of credit as opposed to the payouts you're talking about, you'll also work with partners. So it's kind of a do it internally and then also work with other kind of tech enabled partners, right?
Yeah, I mean, clearly financial services is a space where one can't do everything. And this is one area where we have very strong partnerships with innovative companies like the likes of Balance, of TreviPay, of others, and I can't name them all, where Vertex and Avalara for tax also, which obviously is it's a very important topic in that space, and it's proving to be really beneficiary for our customers. But it's also an area where we are planning to invest ourselves as we see fit with kind of like unaddressed needs.
Yeah, it seems like probably logistics would be the most variable in terms of, you know, doing logistics and fulfillment. You know, that is just so nuanced by customer category and segment and marketplace type, you know, but the other ones, yeah, are a little bit more universal, right? You can cover a broader swath.
And I mean, to be very, and I like, you know, it's always fun to talk with you because you bring up all the topics, but logistics is one where we've decided for 2023 and 2024 to focus on partnerships in that space. And when it comes to building ourselves, you know, products, this is not one of the area we're going to address in the coming 18 months.
And so what about focus? Let's talk about Miracle Connect and focus. So when you came out with Miracle Connect, it was a somewhat, somewhat controversial decision, right? Both internally, probably more internally than externally, frankly, right? That was a pretty pivotal moment in the customer in Miracle's history, right?
I think there's different ways to look at it. If you look at Miracle Connect as a feed manager or seller aggregator, you may think, you know, it's a like why another, and especially when Miracle has established partnerships with the likes of Channel Advisor and Threadbyte, I mean, and lots of players in that space around the world, and that's why we are not and we've not positioned Miracle Connect as kind of a feed manager, another feed manager. I think the way it started came from our sellers who basically were now selling on 2, 3, 4, sometimes 8 Miracle powered platforms. And basically they came to us and they said, it would be great if I could have a simplified way of integrating and connecting and further down the road, managing my activity and data across these. And they also said, you know, yes, we may be selling on Amazon or eBay or even Walmart, but there is a huge difference with the type of business we run on Miracle powered marketplaces, because they are much more curated. They are much more respectful and mindful of the third party vendors. And so we see that as, I mean, they saw us offering these kind of capabilities as something that would be very complementary, which is why we kind of decided for the first time to build a product that was directly focused on the third party vendors. But it works as a two-sided network also, because, and even three-sided, because in Connect you have vendors, technology partners, and operators of marketplace platforms and dropship programs. So it's kind of a, it works, and it's been, I mean, it's been really interesting to see how we've compared, you know, time to reach the first million, the first 10 million in GMV for customers who launched pre-Miracle Connect and customers who launched post-Miracle Connect. And we're looking at 2x accelerated, if not more, in terms of the time frame to reach those milestones. And usually, because Connect is not exclusive at all, you see that the share of Connect sourced partners is between 40 and 60% for these new launched.
And so this is why I love it. You talk about, right, the ad network. You know, if you can get to density, like in some of your retail categories or in food, verticals that, you know, you have multiple leading and are kind of miracle customers in, right? I mean, you could really get to density where, you know, you could really hit a point of scale and throughput back to the seller where you're driving real meaningful demand back to those sellers, right? And from a share of wallet standpoint, could be approaching some pretty powerful levels. Are you seeing that? And if so, you know, are you seeing that in certain verticals that you know you're more bullish on, or you know, just that fit that thesis?
Yeah, I mean, I think the yes, but we try to approach this in a, not like Amazon has done. Like, we're not trying to be the big guy in the middle, confiscate, kind of like.
Yeah. So let me clarify. You are friendly to the seller, right? Well, and obviously, I mean, yeah, to the enterprise, your marketplace customers. I mean, if I'm a seller on Miracle Connect, it's like, wow, wouldn't I love to sell on a marketplace where the marketplace isn't always trying to screw me?
Yeah, exactly.
And steal my product. That seems, you know, amazing.
Yeah, no. And I think that's really what we are trying to offer. And there are industries like, you know, you take, you know, fashion apparel or department stores. In the US, 99% of department stores who have launched third party or are launching third party seller programs run on Miracle. And I mean, there's a few things I admire about SAP, although, you know, sometimes they get criticized for being a large company. But one of the thing is the best run SAP, I think, has always been a very good motto or baseline for them. So I think we've been, you know, lucky and also worked hard towards that to be in a position where multiple players in the same industry feel not only confident using us as a platform, but also see the benefit of using us as a platform, because we are creating a network effect for them. Indirectly, we benefit from it, because if we have more customers who make more revenue, more GMV, Miracle ultimately thrives. But we don't thrive at the expense of the stakeholders in our ecosystem. We thrive by creating these network effects amongst all our customers.
Yeah, it, you know, this has always been, you know, about how do you help, if the Amazons, you know, were the first movers and have abused their monopolistic status. And so what's the counterpoint to that, right? And how is Miracle, with your enterprise customers and with your Miracle Connect and now your value-added services programs, right? Like, how are you providing an alternative? And it's much harder to do that if everything is decentralized, if you do each one of these things from scratch, right? But yeah, if you can do it in a more coordinated fashion, not 100% coordinated, but more coordinated, it's certainly going to give you a better fighting chance.
No, absolutely. And I mean, that has kind of always been like I think we've always thought that, you know, arming, so to say, the companies to fight back was great, but also helping them to fight back together would be even better.
Okay, you know, bonus round here, and then I'll actually let you talk about stuff that you want to mention that I haven't covered. But bonus round. So one thing, we just came out with some of our latest like B2B marketplace rankings. A couple of the B2B marketplaces have a kind of three-sided marketplace model. So one is in the cosmetics space, where they provide the ability for large kind of retailers and big box stores to procure from, you know, up and coming cosmetic brands. But the startup began as a marketplace between the cosmetic brands and the ingredients suppliers, right? So they're actually able to connect both levels. And so to the retailer, to the big box store, they're able to provide transparency, you know, to the ingredients on sustainability and, you know, what's actually going into the cosmetics products, right? For consumers, and that's very important for a variety of reasons, whether health or environmental, to provide that kind of traceability. You know, are you seeing any stuff like that, those kind of three-sided or kind of a two-level jump in kind of that connectivity?
We are, this is a great example. We are strongly encouraging it. I think we see it come out more of new breeds than incumbents. But clearly, and I think it's probably also a message that's through your own book and research, we are really constantly advocating with our customers to explain to them that this journey is not just about expanding your reach, like accessing the anything within where you sit in the current value chain, but it's about thinking about what your position gives you or how your position gives you authority to start, you know, going upstream, more downstream, depending on where you are in your value chain, and expand this kind of brokering connection, intermediated, trusted connections, because of the legitimacy that you have. And, you know, you're giving the example of this marketplace. Think about all the established players in that space, which could have done this or can do this without having to invest millions in marketing to rebuild a brand or build a brand from scratch, given they're already there. They know the people downstream, they know the people upstream. But for years and years and years and years, traditional business models, pipeline models have been built on, like, you got to stick within point B and C if that's kind of where you've settled yourself in the value chain. Which at the same time, we all go to these MBA thing or see those courses showing that the Fortune 500 companies of 40 years ago, only whatever 10% are still around today because XYZ. And we believe that this exactly what you describe, which is finding the platform in you or embracing the platform strategy, is one of the key ingredients to a long-term survival and thriving.
What else? What other kind of like next bounce of the balls are you seeing? That you're having those kinds of conversations and poking and prodding clients to think about where things are going. Any other?
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of them going on, but we're seeing about, you know, the mutual enrichment of products and services, but at scale, you know. So we have, you know, companies who are integrating both third-party partners selling products, but others that can sell services that leverage the products that others sell. We had one of our B2B marketplace customer called Partstown that was explaining something really interesting they do, which is they have their own site where they're selling parts and to local kind of restaurants and chefs, all that kind of critical parts. And they've kind of, I mean, they're doing many things, but they, I think it's a very good example. They've launched kind of one marketplace where they've onboarded their local distributors and leverage Uber to create something that they call Parts in Town, where in local city where they have distributors, Uber can do the routes, you know, and guarantee 1 hour delivery to all the chefs in their kitchens. At the same time, they have a marketplace which is open to much more diversified third-party offering that basically provides really truly endless aisle. And another thing they're doing, which I found was really interesting, is that basically they have contracts with very famous nationwide food restaurants, like restaurant chains, and they've actually created internal marketplaces for each of these chains. So any franchisee, franchisor can set up these. So I think it's a very interesting example because it shows the how this model can spread across multiple business usage within one, you know, market, you know, one vision initially.
Yeah, I think, transferability and the variability in the network, very exciting. I mean, and in your perch, you're seeing, you know, just so many different or overlapping opportunities. So now how many people are in the company?
Around 750.
That's awesome. Congratulations. What is it that you spend your time, aside of speaking at your, you know, very exclusive conferences, what is it that you most enjoy as in your job as co-CEO?
It's funny you asked that because 2 hours ago I had the monthly boot camp with all the new hires, and someone asked me exactly the same question, and I was like, oh, and my first answer was that, first of all, what I enjoy today is not the same as what I enjoyed a year ago and 2 years ago and 11 years ago, because the fun you have when you're five people in a closet is not the same as when you have 750 people all over the world, and it's a different feel. But fundamentally, what I enjoy the most is when I can see existing customers being happy of and proud of what they've launched, and showing that, expressing that happiness and pride in front of future potential, I mean, customers, and to see this kind of pivotal moment. This is something that's always interesting. I think, especially in the space of B2B, working with our existing customers to understand the finesse and all the granularity of the applications that can be, you know, found in this journey. That I mean, from a business perspective, it's really exciting. And I think on a personal basis, I like to witness when people who have joined the company in the early years are, I can see them in the way they act, embracing the value, really the values and the kind of the founding fathers and mothers values of the company. And I really feel that this is kind of one of these moments where you realize you've built something truly special and where people really embody the company and its mission and its, you know, its dedication to its customers and future customers. And I think that helps me offset the dark side, which is sometimes when I see that our decision process may be slower than what they used to be. You witness slight emergence of politics within the organization. Sometimes someone will come to me And I tell them, why haven't you told that directly to the person? Yeah, these are the tougher moments. And the toughest one of all is when you resign with a customer, and as the implementation starts, the internal dragons and naysayers start slowly crumbling, you know, their way into the project, and instead of being on this kind of positive ride and momentum, we start having to not just deploy a project, but address internal blockers, which I always find are a bit frustrating.
Yeah, that's when you double as like a business therapist.
that's a good way to frame it.
Great. Well, you know, you've got a lot of positives to
outweigh some of those negatives. But I only make money if they get better. That's probably a big difference.
Well, Adrian, it's awesome to have you back on the show. You know, last time was, you know, during COVID.
Yeah, it's been a while, but thank you for having me. And I recommend all your listeners to not just listen to you, but read the stuff and
go get the Online Marketplace Advantage.
I was praising you, not the book anymore. But if you if you want the book one last time,
yeah, there's a lot of golden nuggets. You know, really think you guys did a great job putting it together.
Thanks to great marketplaces. If you don't want to put the money for a new edition, you can even buy it pre-owned. I'll happily mail you one for free if you reach out to me, adrian@miracle.com.
We're going to put that clip at the beginning of the video so everyone can get
hope they get the French spelling of Adrian, which is not like, you know, Rocky the Adrian, you know, spelled differently.
Right. Yeah. Well, and fortunately you took out Nussenbaum from the email address.
Yeah. 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 That was Adrian was hard enough.
Well, hey, my friend, great to have you back on. Hope to hear from you again soon, and go check it out, Online Marketplace Advantage.
Thanks, Alex. Be well.